future. There are no people. There are no people in the future. No people at all. There are no people in the future. Where did all my people go? There are no people in the future. Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome, welcome. Yes, indeed, it is Friday, October 1st. It's the spooky month. October 1st, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to that vaccinated scare poster, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, we are streaming live on our YouTube channel. Want to give a shout out to all those folks who are joining us live on YouTube right now. Hello, Emily. Saw your stuff in the comments. Welcome, welcome. And don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that bell so you know every time that we go live, and share it out with your friends, right? Share it out right now. Hit it up on those social medias that you got, on the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Twitches and wherever you're going to be. Yes, yes, yes. On today's show, well, progressives hold the line, at least for now, forcing Nancy Pelosi to postpone a vote on the $1 trillion Kyrsten Sinema, you know, the Kyrsten Sinema promoted bipartisan, a.k.a. fossil fuel infrastructure bill, right? They are going to be back in session today, so the fight is not over. But right now, they're holding the line, holding out for that $3.5 trillion infrastructure reconciliation bill that would fulfill the Biden Build Back Better agenda. Meanwhile, Joe Manchin says he won't support a reconciliation bill larger than $1.5 trillion. That is $2 trillion less than the compromise package of less than the compromise package, and $4.5 trillion less than the original package. Yes, remember the $3.5 trillion package was the compromise. Well, some West Virginia kayaktivists paddled up to Joe Manchin's yacht in D.C., right? They asked him some better questions than the Beltway media did, and guess what? They got more from him than any of them did, or the cable news shows. Yeah, how about that? And writing into his newsletter, the Daily Poster, David Sirota reported Thursday that Joe Manchin had backed a huge bank bailout bill for Wall Street, you know, back 13 years ago. That's almost to the day where he goes out and basically starts deriding people for having an entitlement mentality as a reason to kill the reconciliation bill. That one would help millions of people struggling to survive as opposed to the freaking bankers. Crazy. Yes, and guess what happened then? Manchin got the bill passed, and then Wall Street execs decided to bankroll Manchin. Surprise, surprise. Now, Greta Thunberg chastised world leaders for their climate change blah, blah, blah over the last several decades, and she calls for immediate decisive action. I want to underscore that 10 times. Meanwhile, FEMA is removing subsidies for flood insurance as claims are expected to rise significantly due to the effects of climate change. Insurance premiums are expected to rise 18% per year for at least the next 20 years, particularly in areas already prone to flooding. And 23 species have been removed from the endangered species list, but this is not good news. They are being removed because they have been declared extinct. Yes, in the last 50 years, the 50 years since the passage of the Endangered Species Act, until Wednesday's announcement, only 11 species had previously been removed from the list due to extinction. How about that? Deb Haaland, the Secretary of the Interior, says the specifics for each of the species' various demise, but the story arc is essentially the same. Humans are altering habitat in a significant way, and we couldn't or didn't do enough to change the trajectory before it was too late. Sound familiar? We're going to be one of those species pretty soon. Back in the day, there were... Oh, wait, I should say this. Are you ready for some serious snail mail? Yeah, beginning Friday, the U.S. Postal Service will start to, quote, implement new standards of service for first-class mail and periodicals that will slow its target delivery time down by about 30%. How about that? Yeah, that's according to USPS spokesperson Kim Frum. She was talking to NPR. Yeah, that's because, you know, who's ahead of the Postal Service? The Trump dude, who wants to destroy the Postal Service so his own company will get the mail business. That guy. Remember the guy who's trying to slow everything down, destroying all the sorting machines so that our ballots wouldn't get to us in time? Remember that guy? Yeah, he's still the one there. Anyways, back in the day, there were the sewer socialists. Today, the sidewalk socialists. Yes, they are making the theoretical question about what it would mean to govern as a socialist into a very practical one. Rebecca Burns of Indy's Times has a great article on the victories of India Walton in the Buffalo Democratic mayoral primary and over 60 DSA-backed candidates who have been elected to local office from Denver to Chicago to Knoxville, Tennessee. It's a great piece. Definitely check it out. And Supreme Court Justice and all-around horrible human being Brett Kavanaugh tests positive for COVID-19. Yes, that's just a few days before the new term begins. Now, before you Google it, yes, he's been vaccinated. Look, I just didn't want to get anybody's hopes up, all right? Today, a little bit closer to home, the PA House Republicans shot down their own school voucher bill. It's like the circle firing group, you know? It's like, swear to God. They were planning on giving vouchers to parents of students who didn't want to wear masks and let them go to school districts or private schools that do not have masking requirements. But they blew it. House Republicans also advanced their voter suppression agenda. They voted House Bill 1800 out of committee and a series of constitutional amendments that would politicize the Secretary of State's office, mandate voter ID, and establish election audits and more. Gee, why would that be a problem? And about 3,000 people showed up in Harrisburg for a maskless super spreader pro-life rally. Sean didn't even want to get close enough to that for a Zoom lens, right? He said, nope, gonna check out of this one. My God, but tomorrow, women's marches are happening across the country, right? It's happening in Harrisburg tomorrow at 11 a.m., but you can look for a rally time and locations near you by going to map.womensmarch.com. That's map.womensmarch.com. Put in your zip code there. You can find what's going on. I know there's ones happening in Doylestown right down the street from me, happening up in Allentown, all throughout the Lehigh Valley, happening all in Pittsburgh and Philly. Check it out. And Cyril Mikulenko, right, he's got a new piece out called Central York High School Students Light a Path for Student Uprisings in Bucks County and Across the Commonwealth. Here. Cyril's going to be back on for the Wednesday show next Wednesday. We're going to talk about that article and more, what these amazing students did at Central York High School, and a little bit about what that points to and what the students right here in Bucks County who are facing similar problems can learn from those students. And yes, speaking of the school districts in Bucks County, yes, I've started getting emails from the Pennridge School District about how my kids are getting exposed to COVID. Just feels all warm and fuzzy inside, doesn't it? Yes. And today's last call, happy birthday to NASA. Yes. On this day in 1958, the legendary space agency was born on October 1st, 1958. Yes. Right. According to space.com, quote, the space agency officially opened for business on this day. President Eisenhower had signed the National Aeronautics and Space Act into law 2 months earlier in response to the Soviet Union's launch of Sputnik. The U.S. didn't want to get left behind in the space race, so Congress created NASA as an organized effort to advance space research and technology. Happy birthday to NASA. And the FAA is investigating Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin about safety measures after an explosive letter published by a group of 21 employees blew the whistle on the company's move to cut safety corners, pressuring employees to work long hours, and in a rush to all try to gain government contracts to compete with SpaceX. And yeah, imagine that. Jeff Bezos forcing workers to work long hours, right, understaffed, through exhaustion and cutting safety measures. Huh. Interesting that the Amazon executive would do that, huh? The letter also alleges that there is a toxic working environment at the company, especially for women. They say sexism was pervasive throughout the company. I want to remind you to tune in to the Rick Smith Show. That streams every night on YouTube, Twitter, and wherever you get your stream content. You can check out all his shows. Head on over to ricksmithshow.com. You can check out, he's on WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, right? He's just, man, tearing it up over there at the Rick Smith Show. Congratulations to everyone there. And I hear that they got some good things coming too. Very, very excited. And don't forget, if you haven't already, you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast. The amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house. And they know where the bodies are buried. Spooky. Ooh, for Halloween month. Make sure to follow them also on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter. And attention all you gamers out there, The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show. They got everything for retro N64s, latest consoles, video games, platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you name it. Right? And look, it's back to school. That means when your kids' report cards come in, they get an A on them. Head them on over to The Game Inn, and they can get a discount for every A on their report card. You can check out them out on their Facebook page and follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn. That's with two N's. That's at The Game Inn on Twitter. Special shout out always goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongOfDayMan with two N's at SongOfDayMan on Twitter. And some programming notes. We've got some great shows coming up on Out to Coop Live. That's Out to Coop Live on Mondays. This coming Monday at 10:04, I welcome back Philly-based investigative journalist Jordan Hopkins. He's coming on to talk about his latest piece in Unicorn Riot called School Board Disruptions Escalate, funded by conservative dark money. It's a fantastic piece that gives us a framework that all the funding mechanisms that are kind of like leading into all these school board uprisings we're seeing across the country. And then on Monday, October 11th, that's 2 weeks from this Monday, a week from this Monday, I welcome Palisades School District Board candidates, Jamie Davis and Cindy Shane. Davis and Shane are running against two right-wing extremist candidates who are QAnon friendly and who have injected division into the district and the community. I can't wait to talk to both of them. They're facing similar issues that we're facing here in the Penridge School District. Right, and as I said before on this week's The Wednesday Show with Cyril Mikulenko, he's back to talk about his latest column, but Bucks County youth must rise up to defend education, looking at the lessons to be learned from the students out there at the Central York High School. Look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. We're here for the fight, but we need you, right? Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, man, it's great to be talking to you. It'd be great to be in this chair today. I've been looking forward to it all week. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm loving this weather. I'm going to start with some positive things here, right? I'm really loving this weather. It's getting me in the fall mood, I got to say.
No, same here. I love wearing my hoodies. So I'm back to like, wear my hoodies, wearing my sweatpants in my apartment and just like lounging around and not doing anything. So it's been nice.
There you go. Lounging around, not doing anything, wearing a hoodie. That sounds like your sweet spot right there.
Yes. I got a couple of really good hoodies from vacation over the summer. And like one of them was like $30 and it's like super soft and comfortable. So I'm enjoying that now.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, man, it's always great to have some additional content for your lifestyle channel too as well.
So yes, that's exactly.
Double bonus. Yeah. So Sean, I don't know what there is to say about the Manchin cinema disaster that is going on in our national politics right now, other than like we're standing on the precipice of kind of like absolutely needed legislation if we were going to be able to stave off like the worst effects of climate change or not.
Yeah, that also like if this goes down, the whole entire Biden presidency will go down with it. Like it's that type of like monumental type legislation where, yep. I think that like I don't know. I mean, like, does Manchin and Sinema want to be remembered as the two Democrats who sunk like a needed presidency? Like, you know what I mean? After Trump.
I think the answer for Sinema especially is yes.
Right? Just because of like
the
headlines.
Yes. And just because she's going to mention. Yep. Exactly. It's what Emma Vigeland says in the Majority Report, right? She's like an attention seeker, and it's just about grabbing the spotlight and where we should get as much as she can get attention back on her. It's just astounding. So it's like, and the fact that she has up until, I mean, again, I was reading headlines and looking kind of through up until this morning, she has not articulated kind of one iota of what she actually wants, right, in terms of negotiation, but she has been like holding fundraisers with some of the top corporate lobbying organizations in the country, right? So she's raking in cash at these kind of 1,000 to 5,000 plate kind of
also
dinners
that
and fundraisers.
Fucking internship she had that like that was reported, like she went on a wine unpaid like an internship with a winery that was out of state. Like, I mean, she's really doing things right now that's going to destroy her political career. Like, I think yesterday on social media, the primary cinema pack launched and is getting a ton of like, is getting a ton of traction on social media. Like, she's really fucking around. And I mean,
I don't think she cares. I honestly don't think she
does care. And also, like, she's just a nihilist at this point. And I think that's okay. She just wants to be remembered as a nihilist.
Yeah. I
don't think there's anything else to it. And it's just like, yeah, like, no, I mean, it's like, yeah.
I mean, look, I look at it like this, like, look, and Manchin, like, I'm sorry, Manchin is just as bad, right? I mean, it's like, Manchin is just as bad as, like, he tries to play this off, well, West Virginia went for Trump by 30 points, so I've got to do X, Y, and Z. But you know what? I mean, Chris Hayes did a great piece on this last night, as I think it was on the Maddow show, too, as well. I was reading reporting in the
Times. Polling in West Virginia
you look at the, like,
the polling on this bill everywhere is fucking through the roof.
It's like, fantastic.
It is one of, like, yeah, I mean, it's polling at, like, 70, 75, like, 66, 70% straight across
in
the
West
board.
In West Virginia,
like,
right? I mean, like, yeah. The minute that West Virginia, it polls about 48%, right? But then if you tell people how you're going to pay for it, you're going to pay for it by primarily taxing the rich and closing corporate loopholes, then it goes up to, like, almost 80% support, right? They're like, yes, right? Because, like, West Virginia, like, we're a poor state, right? Tax the bastards. Like, so that we
don't. Yeah, and, like, you're poor for a reason, because of, like, the exploitation of the natural resources in your state by the coal companies and, like, the coal barons over the past, like, 200 years.
Which is where Joe Manchin makes a ton of cash.
Yes.
Right? But, I mean, yeah, you know, this is what I have to say, one of the worst parts about this, right, well, I mean, there's lots of bad parts, but the worst parts about it is, like, watching some of the, say, the cable news coverage especially, or news coverage of Joe Manchin and of this infrastructure bill and the reconciliation bill fight, right? There's, like, two notable things. One, they've just, like, bought the line, hook, line, and sinker about Manchin kind of being, like, you know, politically vulnerable, and you could understand his moderateness and things like this. When, meanwhile, it's, like, the surest thing that he could do to get himself reelected.
He's on a fucking yacht.
Like, he's on on a yacht talking to people in kayaks, right? And the surest way he could get himself reelected is to back that freaking bill. I mean, saying, like, how it's how it's for West Virginia.
It's one of the most, like, politically fucking beneficial bills he can campaign on. You're just like, there's no moderateness to this.
No, like, I mean, it's
I hate how people buy, like, oh, he's a moderate. No, he's fucking bought and paid for it.
Yeah.
He's on a yacht. There's nothing moderate about showing up to DC in a fucking yacht. Like,
well, and he's apparently that's where he lives. Do you see what the yacht's called to?
What?
Almost Heaven. Right? He's like, I'm almost cashed in, baby.
I don't know how you can kayak to that thing and not throw a fucking Molotov cocktail at it. Like, I'm not advocating for property destruction, but, like,
well, let's put it this way. That's probably a good reason that you, or I, for that matter, should not kayak to his yacht. Right? That we'll stick in this nice little safe space and talk about.
No, I just don't understand, like, the fucking opulence of, like, being on a yacht.
Yep. And to remain up, way up above, instead of coming down to talk to people, to remain, like, after, like, you know, may die.
Here, let me just throw out some coins, like,
exactly,
Caesar.
Exactly. It's like, I cry for you, Argentina. Right? I mean, come on.
If that's, like, not a like, advertisement of why we need socialism,
100%. I mean, like, there you go. Yep.
Like, just, yeah. I mean, like, and also, like, if that's, like, not, I mean, that's also an example like why my generation is so open to socialism and generation, like younger generations, like because like we're getting fucked. This guy's on a yacht. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah,
so. it's really something. It's really something. But you know, let's just be clear what the stakes are. I mean, the stakes for this are absolutely huge. Just as Sean had just said, I mean, if this goes down, if they don't get this reconciliation bill, or you know, now you got Manchin coming out saying that he's only going to deal with like a $1.5 trillion reconciliation bill. That's as far as they'll go. But let's be clear, that is so insufficient for what we need to do. I mean, and this is why, you know, I look at that first, that bipartisan bill. I just call it like the fossil fuel infrastructure bill, because you cannot do the kind of necessary climate mitigation stuff that is needed to be done with a $1.5 trillion, as well as kind of, you know, to use the Biden words, build back basically kind of like a caring infrastructure, kind of social safety or kind of the social infrastructure that has been decimated over the past 40 years. I mean, you can't do it. So you get a chance, you get your opportunity. Then if you do that reconciliation bill, you have to pick winners and losers. You have to be able to say, okay, like, yeah, we're going to pick this thing and we're not going to do this other thing. So who's going to suffer is going to be how the game plays. Or you can do it all, but do it all poorly. Right. Because you're going to be insufficiently funded. And that's where we're at right now. And if the thing doesn't happen at all, look, you might as well just, you know, freaking, you know, cash in your chips, man. Freaking game over. Right. Game over for the Biden thing. And like there's nothing then that will get us the climate mitigation stuff that is necessary in order to meet even like eensy weensy teeny weeny goals directed towards getting us off the, you know, the carbon pipe. But.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, man, it is something. But you know, you got to give those Kai activists some credit for that wonderful little video they took of Manchin from his you know, his castle window, kind of waving down to the like the poor peons, like some, I'm surprised he didn't like pee on him while he was up there, literally. But but they're, you know, good for them.
It's like what Rick says. You know, there's a movie, like it ain't golden showers of like honey or.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. When you talk about trickle down, right? Right. You know, that's not rain. That's not gold that it was trickling down on you. Right.
Yeah,
that's like... literally like people like this dude just pissing on us all. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know how much more you can say about this other, because, you know, it's out of our hands. People are doing great, you know, activist work and kind of, you know, call your legislator, especially kind of in the House, to make sure that they're shored up. Make sure if you're in Pennsylvania, make sure you're calling Casey. I mean, Casey's already on board. Let's be clear about this. But, you know, the more that they're going to hear from people that are being outraged, the better. So, you know, you do this. And I'll tell you this. Do check out that Primary Cinema pack, because she's got to go. And, you know, we've got to really kind of take seriously a serious kind of progressive candidate in West Virginia going forward, too, as well. Not one of these kind of, you know, like hand-picked, poll-tested, consultant-picked candidates going up against Manchin. No, we got to have a progressive and primary that bastard, too, when his turn comes around. So there we go. I mean, the other disturbing news, I mean, you know, this is why I put all this stuff on climate too, as well as you got the United Nations General Assembly happening this week. You got Greta Thunberg there, kind of, you know, giving a speech, basically chastising like world leaders on climate change, basically said, you know, yes, you've said, you know, build back better, blah, 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 right? Net zero by 2050, blah, blah, blah. That's all you've given us are words, right? With no action, right? And, you know, she's 100% right. And this is where we've got to be. It's infuriating. It's infuriating. But, and then, you know, to see that news about these 23 species removed from the endangered list and kind of declared extinct is just, you know, it's just one of those markers, right? That this is what we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, like, and the thing about that is, I mean, I studied environmental science in college. You know, we talked about like this type of stuff. I mean, like an extinction event for like a single species could actually be like a very swift thing.
Yes.
Like, and climate related. I don't think people realize, like, all you need is like one cold snap to in an area that doesn't really get cold, and you destroy a whole entire like species, a population of bugs, insects, birds, stuff like that. Yep. You know, like say like for instance, a really good example of this is the Sonoran Desert. You have the cactuses down there, saguaro cactuses. Like if it gets below freezing for like an hour, they will die. So that's how you can tell like where a cold snap goes through. So like stuff like that. I mean, like you can wipe out a whole entire species population in a very short amount of time. Like with that type of stuff. I don't think people realize like how swift a species can go extinct in an area.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you see, you know, and I think the fact that we see 50 years of the Endangered Species Act, you only had 11 species that were removed from the Endangered Species Act because of extinction, right? To see 23.
I wonder, like, how much of that is just, like, not upkeeping the list because we don't want to admit.
I'm sure there's some of that. They've
gone extinct. Which is still, like, I'm not justifying, you know, 22 species is still, like, all in a lot. But, like, you know, how much of that is just, like, previous, you know, interior people who are bought out by fossil fuel interests. I mean, that Department of Interior's main job is natural resources. How many of them just like swept that shit underneath the rug to not cause concern with like local environment and stuff like that?
Well, that's exactly what they had to say. I was reading some of the articles about this too, and a lot of some of the interviews with the with kind of like scientists and stuff who studied this stuff. They said, look, you know, Deb Haaland is now kind of ahead of the interior. She's the interior secretary, right? And she's got a point. And they actually they dug in, right, and kind of actually did a proper review of this stuff, right, and actually wanted the actual numbers. And this is the kind of stuff they found. And they were just, you talk about an agency that has been gutted. You talk about protections for, say, wildlife, protections of ecosystems that has been just gutted, or
I mean, like,
as you said,
reversing the lead bullet bans and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like,
yep. So, you know, it's troubling stuff. It's troubling stuff. But meanwhile, in other news, you've got the U.S. Postal Service is going to implement new service.
This is just
standards.
Another infuriating fucking story. Like, how is DeJoy still in office? Like, is I know, like, it is going to revolve around this, like, but the parliamentarian said, well, no, fuck the parliamentarian. like it's the same thing with DeJoy. Like, oh, there's like one board of governor. Okay, come up with a bill, stick it into a piece of legislation, like a budget bill. Expand the board of governors, put two more people on there, and fire them too. I mean, this is not a hard fix.
It's not hard.
This is a simple like legislative fix that Democrats can easily do. And Biden, it just seems like everyone's just like throwing their hand in the air, like, well, we can't do anything because the one guy won't do it. No, fucking use your power to change the control of the board. And appoint your people.
It really astounds me. That whole mentality. I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
I mean, like it just shows you, like, Democrats are not a serious legislative party. It's like what Eric says. They're a parody.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and it's you gotta.
They're not a serious governing institution.
No, and it's like, you know, look. I mean, you know,
how much more like fucking. Bad news has to come out about the Postal Service and the destruction of it. And we're a year into the Biden presidency, and this dude's still in fucking office. He should have been gone like the first week.
The fact that they started destroying sorting machines during a pandemic when you knew that there was going to be massive amounts of mail-in ballots. Right. That alone should have got him fired on day one. Right. When you start messing around with the electoral system. But let's even say you don't even need to say that he was doing it for Trump. You just say you messed up with a foundation, a principle of our democracy. You put it at risk. Right. You don't even need to make claims or say that you were in cahoots with Trump. You say, no, you screwed up. Done. Right? That alone. Right? Or just the freaking, I mean, who gets to keep their job? conflict of interest, right? The guy, his business directly benefits when the postal service is having problems. I mean, it's so astounding to me. It's so astounding to me. I just can't even, I don't even know how you sit there with a straight face and go before like the cameras, like Jen Psaki, you know, has to do when answering questions about, they'd be like, well, it's, you know, doesn't really have the power. And Biden's like, well, it's, and then Democrats like give cover for it. I mean, just at the level of freaking self-respect, right? I mean, if you just think, and just for points of contrast, and I'm not saying that we need to be like Republicans here, but I'm just saying, like, point of contrast, if the Republicans wanted somebody out of office,
they'll fucking fire them.
Or they would wage like the most brutal social media campaign or TV campaign about how horrible, and they would just be everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? They'd make up lies about it. This guy,
I mean, they fired the parliamentarian.
Totally. This guy, you don't need to make up lies. Right? You just, like, this is what he did.
Like a basic accountability campaign could, like, sink. Just like,
it's really remarkable, Sean. It's just really remarkable. And it's like, it's infected, you know, and again, it's like, I hate being in this position, right? Where it's like, look, we're finally seeing, right, some like progressive caucus that is kind of like, you know, exercising its spine and kind of like working its muscles again to stop the atrophy, right? And kind of realizing, oh, look, we've got enough people here that I actually want to like, you know, put together a team this year instead of just kind of like, you know, take our lumps and come in last and go for the, you know, banquet at the end of the season, right? But no, you got to actually like a much more muscular progressive caucus there that is actually like highly capable, like organizing focused. They're still in the minority, but it's like, just as that starts to happen and gain some steam, it's like the worst things in the world are coming our way. And the leadership is still in a position where it's playing a game that was like back at the beginning of the 90s, and it's screwing everybody. So, I mean, I don't know, man. It is something. So, I don't know. Get your holiday cards out early. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, you get that mail-in ballot, you better sure as hell make sure that heads out immediately. If you still subscribe to actually, like, you know, actual magazines or newspapers.
I have fucking magazines coming.
Exactly, right? Be prepared to read things that are about a month out of date now. Right? Because by the time it gets to you, you know, it's going
to
be whatever.
How am I supposed to keep up with my fashion with all those, like, magazines coming in late and everything?
Exactly. Right?
Well, no, I mean, actually, the only magazine I do get is my photographer's, Professional Photographers Association magazine. And that thing is worth, like, the $25 a month that I pay to be a part of that. Also the camera insurance. But, no, I mean, like, yeah, it's just going to come weeks late.
It's just crazy. It's just infuriating. It's infuriating. Yeah. But so I do want to highlight this. I've reached out to Rebecca Burns in these times. She's got this great article looking at this, the number of socialists, or at least primarily socialists, but also DSA backed candidates who have actually made it into office and in these times. And she's in these times, she interviewed like over, you know, 60 DSA backed candidates. And there's fascinating stories about they're in there. She does a little bit of the history of some of the sewer socialists. And for those of you who don't know, sewer socialists were the folks in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And they were called sewer socialists because they were focusing on infrastructure and building, you know, different kinds of infrastructures in like around the town to make people's lives actually better on a daily basis, like trash collection, like making sure that the sewage system works, making sure that it was up to date. They built all these public parks, right? And they were there for quite some time. And, you know, Milwaukee for a period of time was like really a remarkable place. right? Because of what these folks did, right? And then some of them called, you know, they got a slur. Some call them sewer socialists, right? Because they took forever to do things, right? It took, you know, we're focused on these projects that took a long time, and it was kind of like a very gradual thing. So they got a lot of flack from kind of from their left wing at the time, but they're working on some of that practical stuff, and now we're seeing that happen again. And what's interesting about one of the little details that I found really fascinating in this piece was that they get the name Sidewalk Socialist, right? I think it's the one from Somersville, Mass, Massachusetts, is where they pick that up. That's, they're calling that themselves. Let me see if I pick that up. I'm not going to be able to find it right here real quick. But so basically, I believe it was Somerville, Mass, where they're starting basically a sidewalk snow shoveling municipal program, right? Because they're basically saying, like, look, why is it that we have plowed streets that are available for cars, yet the sidewalks, right, especially for elderly folks, right, folks who are poor who don't have cars, right, the sidewalks are not cleared as part of a public service. It shows you the privileging of the auto vehicle as opposed to walking in the city. Right. And so they're putting together a program to do just that kind of stuff. Right. So that when it snows out, that you're going to have people going out and, like, a lot of people hired to do this. Right. To go and make sure the sidewalks are cleared so elderly folks can make it to the corner store. People who need to get to their bus stop in order to go to work and make it there safely. Right. I mean, it's just really fascinating. And again, I think also Burns does a great job in this piece about, you know, not kind of overstating the case, right? She's really looking at this as from the perspective, like, you know, what's happening here, and what's some of the history and the connection? What are people learning? You find out there's people out in Denver that are doing really cool projects that other folks in other municipalities are learning from. In one case, it might have been the Denver case where or that might have been Somersville too, but they, you know, were looking for ways to make sure that tenants who were getting evicted under COVID had access to lawyers, because that, even though it was illegal to evict them, the DSA, right, went out and did a whole bunch of data collection and found out that, you know, those folks who did not have lawyers were still getting evicted because they didn't have any protections, right? So they were able to present this to the city council. They had DSA-backed candidates who had elected on city council. They brought that forward, and they looked into this, and they found out that it's true. And meanwhile, the DSA members who were working with some of the socialists who were elected started attending all these hearings, like, along with the tenants, to inform them of their rights and kind of be there to make sure that the process was followed, right? And then they started looking through the budget, right, and found out there was, like, this, like, you know, like, I forget how it was, like, tens of thousands of dollars that was being allocated to buying new, like, computer monitor screens for the police department, right? And they said, hey, we're going to take that line item. We're going to take it. We're not going to get new computer monitors for the police department. We're going to put it into these defense of tenant rights. I believe it was like $40,000. Just really smart stuff that's going on. And at the same time, putting it in context, like, look, no municipality is going to be able to enact socialism on its own, right? And they're very kind of clear about that. But it just kind of this, like, really, really good and smart article and stuff. So I've reached out to her to see if I could get her on the show too as well. I think it would be just some a kind of amazing conversation to have right here, especially as we've seen, you know, the takeoff of DSA in the Lehigh Valley. We've seen it happen in the kind of central PA and Philadelphia, obviously, Pittsburgh, obviously, just some absolutely fantastic work. So kudos to that. Check it out. Check the link in the show, today's show notes, if you want to check out that article from Rebecca Burns from In These Times. It is called Meet the New Generation of Sidewalk Socialists. So do check it out. And as we kind of close this out here, yes, looks like the old scumbag Brett Kavanaugh, I mean, the Supreme Court justice, like scum Supreme Court justice. I just get him confused sometimes.
Yeah, God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, it does work in mysterious ways. And, you know, I just hope that Brett Kavanaugh, he was vaccinated, but he tested positive for COVID. So I'm sure the paste shipments are going to start coming in soon. Wouldn't you think, Sean?
Yeah.
So, you know, well, on the bright side of life, you know, Brett Kavanaugh is going to, hopefully he's going to come out of that. You know, he's not going to, you know, he'll survive COVID and maybe that'll change his mind, right? Or at the very least, he'll be dewormed. So that'll be good too. So any other stuff you got on the national scope, Sean?
No, not really.
Just... All right. Well, we're going to keep things rolling today, folks, because it's that kind of day. And like, I'm feeling like a little on the edge of hopelessness. So I'm just going to allow that to roll. There you go. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you that you can help support this show. You can help support all the work that we're doing by heading on over to patreon.com/rcpress today. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. And look, and if you're out there, if you're listening to this show, if you listen to this show live on YouTube, like share the show out. Like share it as we're talking right now. Share it out. Post it to your social media accounts. Let people know about the show. If you're listening to this as part of the podcast, share it out with other folks, right? We've got a great crew of folks that has just been really kind of blasting our stuff out, blasting our shows when they're coming out, up on Twitter and Facebook, right? And it's just been great to see. And I want to thank everybody who's been really has been out sharing the show, doing it. And also want to put a special kind of note in for those folks who came on as new patrons over the past month and the month of September. Thank you so much for hopping on the train and helping support this show. For now, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to come right back and see what's happening, around the block here in Pennsylvania. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We will be right back, and I keep on hitting the button.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1851. That was the day that William Henry, a black cooper or barrel maker who went by the name of Jerry, was arrested in Syracuse, New York. He was first told that he was being arrested for theft, but then he learned that federal marshals had arrested him for violating the Fugitive Slave Act passed the year before. Jerry had escaped slavery in Missouri. The Anti-Slavery Liberty Party was holding its convention in a nearby church. When word came about Jerry's arrest, a crowd rushed to release him. Once released, he was quickly recaptured and returned to custody. But then a large crowd, numbering more than 2,000, gathered to free Jerry from the office where he was being held. According to research done by the Syracuse University Library, the first person into the office was J.M. Clapp, an iron worker likely chosen for his brawn. The crowd was able to free Jerry and hide him until he could escape into Canada. Clapp also had to flee to Canada to avoid arrest along with 8 others. 19 people were indicted for participating in the rescue. Only one person was ever convicted, and he died before he could appeal. In turn, the abolitionists won an indictment against the marshal who had arrested Jerry. They charged him with kidnapping. Although the marshal was acquitted, it gave the abolitionists a chance to publicly challenge the constitutionality of the Fugitive Slave Act. Each year until 1858, a Jerry Rescue celebration commemorated the event. Abolitionists referred to the, quote, Jerry level as a standard for justice. In 2001, a monument to the rescue was dedicated in Clinton Square in downtown Syracuse. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back. It's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, sitting right here once again with the Sean Kitchen himself. I guess start calling him the Sean Kitchen. It just got to be as simple as that. So it seems like the House Republicans were doing their own kind of like special kind of dance this week, huh?
Yeah, it looked like it was pretty fun. So apparently the Republicans were trying to push a school voucher bill again this week, because that's, there's never the dull moment to exploit a crisis for your
can't you just imagine school. The conversation like that, I'm saying, like, hey, I've got an idea.
Right? It's like a flow chart. It's like step one, step two, voucher bills. Like Black Lives Matter, like riots, let's just promote vouchers. Which is what they were doing last year, like at one point.
Hey, if the only tool you have is a hammer, Sean,
swing away.
Everything looks like a nail.
Keep swinging. Yeah, but no, exactly. So the Republicans, they had a voucher bill that was going to allow students who did not want to wear masks get vouchers to go to a different school district or different schools that did not have mask mandates. I mean, like, your face is like, it's just like, I mean, for everyone else, this seems crazy.
Yeah.
And it is crazy. But like, this is like what normal looks like in Harrisburg.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, I mean, the Republicans, like their own members shot down this amendment, which like, they shot it down by like 10 or 15 votes too.
That's so just like, kind of like, that's remarkable. Right. I mean, because you're not talking about like,
The Republicans have a large majority in the House to begin with.
That's what I mean. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Yeah. That you've gone so far off
so
the rails.
So fucking absurd.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Like, I don't think I've remember seeing a school voucher bill like this get shut down. Well, they get shut down a lot. But I mean, yeah, like they immediately like broke for session. They immediately went to caucus and then canceled voting for the rest of the day because there was a the celebrity softball game was happening at on Harrisburg City Island.
It's between the two crazy.
I did not go to it, but yeah, like the celebrity soft or like yearly like the legislative softball game. And yeah, I mean, just the bullshit that happens here in Harrisburg is just like, you know, like they literally canceled voting for the day so they didn't miss the fucking softball game.
Well, you know, it is a kind of a like, you know, an annual kind of moment of bipartisan glory, right? You know?
Yeah. So
I shouldn't belittle that much because I actually don't think that's a bad thing, right? I actually don't think it's like a bad thing to have just kind of some like normal interactions as part of a routine and things like this. The only problem, but I can only say that when you think about that game in the complete abstract, right? But once you put it into context, it seems like
yeah,
actually crazy.
And then you know, on Monday, so they're like that happened. And then on Monday, House Republicans and the State Government Committee voted out a bunch of voter suppression bills. 1800, which is a resurrection of House Bill 1300, which Wolf vetoed and he's going to veto again. And then they sent out a bunch of like constitutional amendments, which is something like we have to watch because the like the Republicans want to use the Constitution to permanently change,
right?
Or like this extremely anti-democratic maneuvering that exploits like a low turnout election to permanently change law in Pennsylvania and law that you cannot repeal or law that is extremely hard to repeal because you have to go through the constitutional process. So Republicans want to do that with, they want to make the Secretary of State's office an elected row office, you know, which is what Trump people want across the country.
Right.
So they can get, you know, we shouldn't be politicizing the office that handles elections, you know.
Not bad really idea. Just, I mean, I don't know about you, but it just seems like just a bad idea.
Especially in this time. Want to do a constitutional mandate for voter ID, establish election audits. I think some of the stuff like here will make your voter private, like your voter actual voting information public. Like your ballots will be public. Who you voted for would be public for people to see. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you know, this, okay, this gets back. You know what this is like, right? This is like, you know, there's a reason why you have that, like the secret ballot and cameras are not allowed in like the voting booth. You're not supposed to take a picture of your own ballot and things like this. And I know some people do anyways, but whatever, or the voting stuff is because that's what the mob used to do. The mob used to sit there and they pay you to go in and to vote for a particular candidate, but you had to prove it, right? Or, you know, I shouldn't say just that, not just pay you, right? But not break your kneecaps. Right. You got to prove you're going to vote for this person, and to prove it, you got to take a picture to show me that you actually did as proof that you did what we said. Right. And so that was a problem. Right. This is like the mob mentality just like gone off the rails like everything else right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is just as like the fucking like the the audit, the fake audit stuff that's happening with the voter information. Like, come on, we really going to be given, like, they really want to give your voter information to over 9 million people over, like, Sidney Powell and stuff like that. Like,
it's something, man. I'm telling you.
There was a really good point made by one of the House Dems, a couple of them in the point, Joe Webster, who's from the Southeast. You know, he called it a constitutional amendment crisis that we are currently in Pennsylvania. And I feel like that's a really good way of describing it. Republicans winning statewide offices, especially the governor's race, prospects is looking pretty slim for them with Shapiro running. And then in general, because of numbers, like the largest decreases we saw with the census came from these parts of the state that these Republicans are from, like, and yeah, so no, it's about power.
Yeah,
it's about holding on to power.
100%, 100%. And this is, you know, I mean, I guess if there's any,
and they will use like anti-democratic methods, yes, of like exploiting a 10% voter turnout primary to,
right,
do it,
right,
and call it the will of the people,
right,
when, well, only like 10% of the electorate supported it.
Right. And I think that, you know, I mean, if there's one positive thing about this, I think that more so than at other points, like, people are actually paying attention to this stuff. And because it is, you know, it is kind of a coordinated national plan, right, that you're, you know, the patterns are kind of like available for anybody who's like, you know, gives a crap to see it. So that's a that is a positive thing. So, you know, so people are able to organize it in a way or on a different way. But, you know, if you got super majorities, like you do, well, almost not quite, but I mean, if you got like overwhelming majorities in state legislators, like you do here in Pennsylvania, paying attention, okay, that's great. But if you don't have the votes, right, you don't have any recourse, they can pass this stuff. And then, you know, and then now we're in a whole different world of hurt. So,
yeah. And I mean, like, they're probably going to want to pass as many things as possible because of the new maps that are going to be coming up in 2022. Like, pass stuff, try to get the maps delayed till 2024, and then, you know, like, get all these amendments lined up.
Yeah, and if you could kind of like,
and then have new maps, and then go into your new maps in a presidential election year where you may or may, where you may lose your majority because of how those districts are going to be.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the game plan now.
Right, exactly. I was going to say, like, and in the meantime, so their job right now is basically, you know, to neuter as much of the state apparatus as possible that makes it impossible for.
And they want to take power away from the governor.
Right, right.
Because they know that they will not be winning the governor's race. Like, the only meaningful thing that they did in Harrisburg this week was extend, like, Governor Wolf's emergency orders around emergency business waivers and stuff regarding Hurricane Ida. Mm-hmm. Like, 95% of what he asked for, he got. Like, that's the only meaningful thing they did this week. So,
well, I guess cheers for that. Yeah, I mean, let's do it. Well, I'm glad they did that, especially since you had a little super spreader event happen out there in Harrisburg this past week, right?
Yes. Like, 3,000 people showed up for the pro-life rally. Anti-abortion rally, you know, forced birth rally, you name it.
Yeah.
I saw the spokesperson for the Catholic conference while we're sitting on Roxbury's deck, and he walked by and I asked him why he hates women so much and when's he going to hold like the women's rights rallies with like Malcolm Kenyatta and Rep Madden there. He got so fucking pissed.
That's awesome.
Just like, no, fuck these people though. I mean, like, that's pretty much like what I think about like the Catholic conference, and especially like this group of people. They had a fucking stage set up in the middle of State Street, and their holding pen was the offices of the Commonwealth Foundation.
There you go.
Like, their fucking cattle chute from the stage, like, went right into the Commonwealth Foundation's front doors.
Crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there are 3,000 people there for that. I did not say I got out of there, but
I don't blame you, because look, like, if this is like on this the side over here, right? If this right here is the kind of the right wing ideologues and nut jobs, right? And over here, and you know, those over here, and then over here, we've got the the anti-masker, anti-vaccine conspiracy theorist. The Venn diagram kind of looks like like this at this point. Sorry for those people who are just listening.
So here's the thing about this rally. Like, okay, so the thing that like got me about this, 3,000 people showed up. They packed themselves into like fucking buses. So this is the scene. They all came down unmasked in these buses, packed like sardines, like no seats available on these buses. During the middle of this Delta breakout, had the rally on the Capitol steps, you know, screaming. There was one kid in his shirt, like unmasked, unvaxxed, unafraid. Just like, yep. No, and I mean, like, how many of these people are going to get fucking COVID? I mean, they went back on their buses. They didn't stay. Well, no, then they went inside the Senate. They went inside the Capitol building for 2 hours and had all the, like, Senate security guards and House security, like, locking down their offices. They were not allowing people in these fucking offices. Like, because they're spreaders. Just, like, even the Republicans were like, the fuck are you people doing in here? So...
Well, you know, at least they know, Sean, that they'll have pie in the sky when they die. So that's that'll be good.
But no, I mean, like, how many of these people are going to be sick and dead within a couple weeks?
I'm telling you.
Like,
that's the tragedy, right? I mean, that's the.
You know, like at least a handful probably will be. Who
yes,
this
of
rally.
Course they will be. Of course, of
like
course.
That just alone, and then that like spreading that back out in their communities, if it's not even like there right now. I mean. Like, there are hospitals all throughout South Central Pennsylvania counties, actually, that don't have any beds available right now. It's, like, I mean, we're seeing stories of people dying who need, like, kidney dialysis treatments, but couldn't because every bed was taken up.
It's horrific, man. It really is. You know, we've talked about this before. I mean, I have a tough time at some points just kind of being like, all right, you just go all into a room together and let's just get this all over with. You just go all in there, right? You just cough on each other. You do all that kind of stuff.
I mean,
we'll lock the freaking doors and we'll see how many of you come out. You could do your little freaking like, you know, whatever. You're kind of like whoever survives the stronger, fittest, whatever you want to talk about.
But also like seeing the stories of like negative partisanship around this, like people aren't getting vaxxed. Because liberals are getting vaxxed. Like,
It's remarkable.
The negative. And then, like, well, you saw the Chris Hayes thing this week, right?
Yeah.
How they're just, like, fucking spamming people with emails about not getting vaccinated and not being masked. Like, you're killing the people that are giving you money.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I think... This is horrible to say, but it's like, you know, it's the only thing that's going to get us out of here. You know, it's like the virus got us here and like the ideologies have kept us here. And now the virus is the only thing that's going to potentially get us out of this. Right. And what I mean by that is like, the one thing that has been, if you look at you following the numbers on the COVID cases, you know, the numbers have been dropping. Right. And they've been, I mean, not, you know, not to like a safe level. Right. But, you know, this has been a pattern. We talked about this like a while back. There's a pattern we saw with the Delta variant that it would burn through. It burns through populations so quickly. And some places where you had high levels of vaccination, right, that the spike would be kind of shorter. But we have so many people to burn through here, right, that those.
I mean, we're just like coasting at like 5,000 cases a day right now in Pennsylvania, like for the past like week or so. I mean, like, yeah, it's just like shit's gonna add up soon, like with more people dying.
Well, that's exactly it. And you have the thing is that you have something like in, you know, if you look at the U.S. Here's the thing, right? You have the case. It's really uneven, too. You go to the U.S. as a whole. Right. This is you look at New York Times statistics here. The U.S. as a whole, we see the 14 day change. There's been a kind of like a negative 26% change. Right. So that's significant and that's positive. But then you look in Alaska. Right. Which is the last thing you've seen an uptick of like 75% increase.
I mean, like right now in Dauphin County, I'm looking at numbers. We're like numbers we've seen back in January, like on the downslope, on the downslope from January, and the numbers up here are still going up.
Right. And so then you have, you know, we can look at these numbers, you know, this is what I mean. It's like, I wish I could say I had a lot of hope that people are going to start doing the right thing, but I just don't see it. You know,
and then you see them at the health, or go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
The Department of Health released data this week, COVID data or vaccination data based on political districts here in the state.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Like,
no.
Yeah, this on Monday, which came out some pretty interesting stuff. Like the lowest rate vaccination rates in the state's Brian Cutler's district, in the House Speaker. The House fucking Speaker's district is the lowest. I mean, like, that's pretty remarkable, in my opinion, just because, like, you're part of leadership and you should be encouraging your constituents to get vaxxed and you're not.
Yeah.
And that's just reflected on you. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But, yeah. Some of the most vaccinated cases, well, outside of Philadelphia, because Philadelphia didn't release their data for that stuff because of, like, the issues with their data system. But, like, Allegheny, Dan Miller, is the highest, like, vaccinated rate in the state. And some Republican counties around that Republican districts over there, too.
It's tough, man. Well, I tell you, as a parent, right, who's, like, you know, in a school district that is basically, you know, ruled by the very same nut jobs you're talking about, right? I mean, that we're really off the rails here. You know, I don't know if you saw this week, but, you know, in my school district, I could spend a lot of time on this, but probably Cyril and I'll probably dig into this a little bit next week. And we're also going to talk more about the school district stuff on Monday when I'm talking to Jordan Hopkins about some of the money behind the school district, what's happening in the school districts. But the school board meeting in the Penridge School District this past week was just kind of, I mean, once again, off the rails. I mean, one of the biggest problems you have the right wing and the ideologues and the anti-vaxxers and the kind of anti-critical race theories, they're well organized and people are providing them with scripts, right? So you watch the school board meetings and they're coming up with, you know, these long documents, and they've organized it so that they've got a range of messages. They're not just repeating each other. They're building a case and building on this and getting stuff on the record. And so, you know, parents who are organizing for, like, you know, common sense and, like, educating your kids for the real world are starting to get organized too as well. But, you know, it's that gap. But, you know, one of the things that they did is the Penridge School Board, for example, just amended its policies this past week, right? Now, I'll read you, this came out in the Doylestown Patch, but here's just, this is what we're dealing with. So the Penridge School Board made several changes to its policies on Monday night to loosen the district's immunization requirements and give itself the authority to ignore and overrule public health orders. The Penridge School District will now grant exemptions to immunization mandates for parents who object to their children being vaccinated for moral reasons, right? The board also amended the wording of its policy on immunizations and communicable diseases by saying the district will now consider the orders from state and local public health officials instead of requiring that those orders be followed by all students, parents, and staff members. That's what's happening on the ground. Right. And the reason why they did that little change, if you remember in Governor Wolf's mask mandate that he put out, he basically, there's a clause in there that basically says school districts need to follow their existing policies for this. So what you're having is the Penridge School District is, and they're not the only one that's doing this. They're changing their policies to basically look for loopholes to go around any kind of state or county mandates. And so, you know, so now my kids go to this school. Right, we got our first letters this week that your kid may have been exposed because a kid was in school with symptoms, right? And now they've tested positive, right? But there's still no mandate. You have no idea about whether the kid involved, right, was wearing a mask, or if their parents kind of put in one of these kind of like bullshit objections or exemptions just because they said they didn't want their kids wearing masks. Based on nothing, right? And so then now here we go. Now we, you know, you spend, this is the psychic toll of every single day of basically then having to navigate, like, the testing regimes, how long we have to wait to get him tested to see if he's actually kind of been exposed, right? Because it's not just, it's not just him, right? So if he comes and he contracts it, my daughter is not old enough to get the vaccine, right? So that puts her at risk, right? My wife works in kind of like, you know, with older folks, right? It could put them at risk, right? And all that, and all that goes on in the community. So it's like, that's you know, kind of what we're seeing around the state. And as these cases, you know, burn through, it's like, you got to wonder, it's just, what are we going to end up with in the end? I mean, how many people are going to needlessly lose their lives, right? Or end up with long-term disabilities as a result of this, because people are just being freaking insane right now. Not, I shouldn't say people in general, but these people, right? And the other thing I would say about it too, as well, is that, you know, the sad part, the other sad part about it is that the majority of people are actually doing the right thing, right? I mean, that's the one thing that I have people, thank God I have people in my life reminding me that all the time, because it's, you know, I guess I have a little bit of a reputation of going down the dark path, like, you know, the cloud path. And just remind that, look, most people are doing the right thing. Most people are masking. But I also know that that varies greatly by where you are. Like, so for example, on my way home from work, I stop once every couple of weeks or something like this. I'll stop at the Wegmans in Allentown, right? Because it's kind of on my way home. Gives me a quick jump in, kind of do a little shopping on the way home to do that. And so that's good. And I go into that Wegmans and everybody's got their mask on. There's a few people here and there who don't, right? But everyone's got the mask on. Then I come down here in Percocet and I go to the local Giant, right? Maybe if it's a regular kind of busy time, maybe a couple other people have their masks on, right? That's what we got. That's what we got. So I don't know, man. We're going to be in for it. You know, I mean, it's like that's what these people have wanted from the beginning. You know, they've wanted to let the virus run its course and burn through and cull the herd. Right. And looks like they're getting their way in a lot of parts of the country right now. So crazy, man. Glad you're having fun.
Yeah, I'm looking. So the House Democratic Policy Committee made a video from the crocodile video that I shared earlier.
Yeah, that is like by the way, everybody, that was one of the reasons for our little delay at the beginning thing today. Is that we're watching a freaking crocodile video. So, I had some tech issues that I had to work out, but then Sean's like, oh, did you see the crocodile video? I'm like, no. I'm like, oh.
So like they made the video of like them putting the PA House Dems logos over the guy who put the crocodile in the trash. And the crocodile has GOP election tampering caption underneath of it.
There you go. There you go.
Nice. Impact fine. So
nice. Nice. Well, hey, listen, in good news, at least, you know, we've got tomorrow around the country and right here in Pennsylvania, there's going to be the women's marches in defense of women's reproductive rights and control over their own bodies. I know that out in Harrisburg, you said like 11 o'clock in Harrisburg is the march.
We got some big speakers.
Oh, yeah.
Out here, Attorney General Josh Shapiro is going to be speaking. Sarah Hammond is going to be speaking. She works at the AFL-CIO. Lou Kirkland, who ran for city council a couple years ago, she's going to be speaking. Yeah, it's going to be a big event. We'll see how many people show up. But no, this is definitely going to be an issue for the 2022 election. I think it's a winning issue for Democrats if they get out in front early on it.
And they're not afraid of it.
Access to reproductive rights in Pennsylvania polls very high in the state. And you know, we don't have the caucus of, we may like, you know, even like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you had like 20 Democrats who would always vote for, you know, who were anti-choice. I think that number's down to like a few. We have a bunch of the old white dudes retiring or getting voted out by, like, you know, having Sarah and Summer and Fiedler, Emily Kincaid and others in office. So
yep, No, excellent. So, I mean, if you can, if you get out there, you know, wear your mask, get out there, it's outside and things like this. And I think that people be pretty conscientious over here. If you're up in the kind of Lehigh Valley area, you know, and the Bethlehem, they've got their rally starts at 10 a.m. It's meeting at the Bethlehem City Hall Plaza. We've got another one down in Hilltown, kind of right down the road from me. That is and Creamery Road in Hilltown at 2 p.m. on Saturday, the 2nd. You can look at, you know, we can just go down the list if we wanted to in Doylestown, right? It's also at 2 p.m. on Saturday. That's going to meet at the old Bucks County Courthouse on 55 East Court Street in Doylestown. If you're out in the Reading area by Kutztown, 10 a.m. on Saturday, it's going to meet at the Reading City Park. But you can just head on over to map.womensmarch.com. You put in your zip code, you put in your, you know, kind of your area or the city where you live, and it'll give you a list of stuff that's going around. So get out there and kind of support this, because I think you're right, Sean. I think this is a, you know, 100% an issue that's got to be front and center moving forward, especially as we see the full assault on Roe v. Wade. That has just only, I believe, just begun. So
I think we're starting to see that now. You know, like, we really have to work on sinking Republicans and use, like, what Gavin Newsom did in the recall effort to sink Larry Elder. I mean, that was going to be, like, a failed proposition from the start. But, like, once he started defining who Larry Elder was and connecting him to all the crazy policies that comes straight from groups like the Commonwealth Foundation and stuff like that, having a zero minimum wage is like a pretty standard talking point for Republicans. Like, I think just like using those negatives, or not negatives, but like you start using that stuff against them, like their own words.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, like, and tying them to Texas. I mean, we see Democrats doing that now. You're going to have a lot of campaigns like, they're going to be saying, we're not going to be like Texas.
Yep. Well, there we have it. So we'll see that. I hope to see people kind of out and about then. We're just finding out that, let me just check this out real quick. This is a meeting taking place on the infrastructure bill. House Democrats meet as leaders race a secure deal on Biden priorities. She says that they're on the a path to pass the infrastructure bill today. What that's going to mean, what's going to be really interesting to see here is that, is Nancy Pelosi going to try to recruit Republicans, right, to support that bill to get it past the progressives in the House? That's going to be a fascinating move.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that is going to happen, but unless there's been some...
So major... make a bill shittier.
What
concessions are you looking for at that point?
You gotta wonder. Says those talks, which also include Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and the White House, already resumed earnest on Friday. White House officials met Thursday evening in Manchin's office along the Capitol with Sinema, but the West Virginia Democrat appeared unmoved after their meeting. Those centrists want the bipartisan infrastructure bill to pass the House, but are less keen on the sweeping spending care of the $3.5 trillion. Well, we'll see. Pramila Jayapal said the resolution is not here in this caucus. The resolution is with the two senators and the rest of the 98% of the Democratic caucus. Jayapal said, I'm noting that she's been in touch with the White House multiple times since last night. I feel very confident that we're going to be able to deliver both these things, but you're going to have to give us some time, because it takes time to put together these kind of transformational investments. I mean, we'll see. I mean, you know, this kind of stuff, you don't know what's coming out of people's mouths, how much of that is designed to try to push people in certain directions, how much it reflects what's going on here. But I just wanted to give that a check-in before kind of we moved into today's last call for here. So we shall see, Sean. We shall see. So real quick, yes, definitely tune in, folks, for the Wednesday show with Cyril Mikulenko. On next Wednesday, we're going to talk about what happened in York Central High School, our Central York High School, then beating back the kind of attempts to ban a bunch of books. And then on Monday and Out the Coop Live, we're going to be talking with Jordan Hopkins about the kind of dark money behind these crazy school board kind of candidates, I don't even know what to call them. Everything that the craziness that's happening at our school boards right now, we're going to be talking about on Monday there too as well. Anything else going on at PA you want to throw me before we go to this week's last call?
Nope. I don't think I have anything else going on.
Fantastic. All right. We'll be back right after this quick break. We're going at the, blah, 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 blah. I don't even know what's wrong. It just happened with my mouth all of a sudden. But we will be right back after this quick break with this week's last call. Talk to you in a minute. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here once again with Sean Kitchen for this week's last call. Yes, indeed, everybody. We talk Space Nose. Sometimes we talk beer. Sometimes we talk about plans going for the weekend. Sometimes we talk TV, you know, what goes on here. I just want to give a shout out at the top of the show to happy birthday to NASA once again, right? On this day, went officially kind of got off the ground on this day in 1958 after everyone freaked out after the Soviet Union launched Sputnik. They started NASA, and then here we are, legendary space agency. Happy birthday to NASA. I do not feel bad for Jeff Bezos today, as the FAA is basically looking into, the whole idea that he's applying his the principles of Amazon of abusing workers and not giving a crap about anything other than kind of being the top dog ahead of his penis rocket. Jeff Bezos, they're looking into that after allegations of rampant sexism, right? And a toxic working environment, cutting safety corners, and all sorts of stuff. So that's looking in that. It was a letter that was released by, assigned by 12 employees. Well, I said 21, I'm sorry, 21 employees. But most of them were unnamed because they were worried about retribution, but that kind of made itself out. So that was always interesting to see. Sean, what do you got planned for the weekend? I know that you're you were talking about heading out to the Women's March, but you got other stuff happening for the weekend?
No, not really getting coffee. I bought a chicken over the weekend, so I'm going to be roasting a chicken tomorrow night. So I'm looking forward to that.
Nice.
Yeah, and some fall food.
Yeah. I think I'm making a stew.
Yeah, it's nice and cool where I can like use my oven again and like stand over the stove. So
yeah,
I've been cooking more lately.
Yeah, that's good. I'm going to make a Guinness beef stew this weekend, which I just feels appropriate for the time. So that'll be pretty cool. And I'm going to be doing some more yard work this weekend. That's pretty much all I'm going to be doing. So that maybe yeah, doing a little brushing up on my D&D too as well. I got to start still digging into that. So.
Nice. Oh, I went to the Portugal the Man concert last week. Was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought it up. I was going to ask you, but then I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was great. I ate 275 milligram gummies beforehand. and I was not expecting the lights and the sound. It just hit me all at once in like a sensory overload. So I mean,
so like, it sounds like wasn't exactly the positive experience that I was hoping for.
No, it was. It was a good experience. It almost like felt like I was on an acid trip at that point.
Oh my god.
No, it was a great show. Like, excellent show, first concert since the break. Well, since like the pandemic. They like played all their good hits. What I love about Portugal and Man, what they do a lot is like they do like a lot of older covers. So, and they'll do it in like, they'll throw a cover of like the Rolling Stones into like a breakdown of their own song and then go right back to their own song after they're done the cover.
Oh, that's cool.
So they did that like with Gimme Shelter. They started off the concert with Native American or like people from the Three Rivers Council in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They're native people who were from like the Caribbean. And they were explaining, and what Portugal Man does, they've started doing is like, they're getting a lot of like native people to explain the history before their concerts. So they spent like 5 minutes talking about, you know, like how the whites pretty much came into this area and committed genocide on the Susquehannocks and Conestoga tribes, like, which is like a history like we're not taught.
Yep.
We're not really like memorial. Like here in Pennsylvania, I remember like having a conversation with someone about that, just like the lack of tribes in Pennsylvania, and just like, what are you talking about? Like, they're from the Southwest. Like, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of like reservations, and like, yeah, that's not happening here on the East Coast. Like, we killed them all.
Yep.
So I mean, like, but like, so there was that. The show was awesome. The singer's wife or girlfriend was on the always tours with them, and she does backup vocals, and she was singing Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit cover, which was awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they came in doing they started off by playing From Whom the Bell Tolls from Metallica for like 3 minutes and then just like went into like their own music. So it was just awesome. It was obnoxious at that point, but I mean, like, they're the band I've seen. They played for like 90 minutes straight through. They don't talk to the crowd at all. So it was a fucking great time.
Nice, Ben. That's fantastic. That is fantastic. And so while you're doing that, I went apple picking, which was good.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. We got three like huge bags of like.
Where do you go?
So we went. There's this place up in Quakertown outside. It's actually in Coopersburg.
Okay.
I'm going to forget the name of it because we've gone to Solberry, because I know that you're a big fan of Solberry Orchards I always remember it used to be like,
yeah,
I went up there,
picking
I drove there and I got these berries. These berries are just so amazing. There's no, like, I remember like, you see.
We would, Solberry, that's the one up past Doylestown, right?
Yep.
Yeah. No, I know my parents would go up there for apple picking too.
Yeah, they have great stuff. What's nice about this one, let me see if I can find it. I should give them a shout out because it's a really kind of cool place. It is, let me see here. No. Cooper's, that's the wrong one. Sorry. Hold on just a second. But we've gone there now for a few years because it's like it's a small kind of family owned one, and it's rarely crowded, you know, it's not a people. It's still like in a field and stuff. They don't have like a big carnival or anything like that around it. Berg PA apple picking. It's like Hamilton Family Orchards, I think is what it is. Let me see if that's right. Pick your own. It's not gonna give it to me. I believe it's called Hamilton Family Orchards. Yeah, something like that. But if you look it up, I'm not gonna be able to find it. It's up in Coopersburg, just kind of north of Quakertown, a little bit off the beaten path and stuff, but it's nice. It's beautiful back in there too as well. It's we got a couple big bags of Honeycrisp apples, and then got some mixed of like Jonah Golds and Empire and things like that. Like I've already made some applesauce, gonna make some apple crisp this weekend, things like this. So I love this time. I love like fresh apples. When I grew up, there used to be this place in Utica called Twin Orchards, and it's now a mall. Yeah, exactly. But we used to get these, you know, a big cardboard bushel of apples right at this season, and we just keep them in the garage. And, you know, on my way to school every day, I used to just go out and just grab an apple, right? And just kind of like, you know, have a nice fresh apple on the walk to school in the morning. It was just freaking awesome. So I'm looking forward to it. So, anyways, so just that, and, you know, I'll just have to get to a little bit of, you know.
What's that, D&D?
I don't know. It's just a player's handbook for something or something. I can do a little of that.
I never got into that. I don't know the point of Dungeons and Dragons. So
it's a lot of fun, actually. It's if you think about it, it's like collaborative storytelling is really what, in the best case scenario, right? I mean, some people just play it for like the hack and slash kind of stuff. But if you have like a really good DM or doing a good campaign, you got characters who are into it. It's like, you know, collaborative or collective storytelling, really what it is. So kind of fun.
So did you see that death rates in rural, the rural area is now twice that of those in the urban?
Yep.
I mean, I'm just looking at the COVID numbers right here by county, and just like, I'm living in one of those counties where we're going to have higher COVID cases now within the next week or two than there were before January, we're going to be peaking in the January, like past the January spike.
I know.
In this part of Pennsylvania.
It's what I mean. It's like, it's really, it's depressing. I don't know what else to say. I mean, you know, and I should say this too as well. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, I just, you know, I talked a little about this on the Out the Coop Live this past week, but you know, it's, I go from home, right, where I'm in the midst of this insanity, and the school board has gone off the rails, and I have to worry every day if my kids are going to be safe, and feeling like pretty powerless. Right. Like on a daily basis to do this stuff. And it's infuriating to me. I don't like being in that situation. It's not that I'm not doing anything, but it's just like the kids still go into school. And then I drive for a freaking hour a day to go to Kutztown. And it's the same thing there. Right. I mean, I've got, you know, students like sitting in my classes, coughing up, you know, like sneezing into their masks and everything like this. I'm like, you know, I think, well, let me be clear. I think the vast majority of my students are like super conscientious and like, you know, and things like this, but it's like, what are you going to do? We had a story from a faculty member today, right? Or this morning, because my friend Mike, right? He said, sat there, met in office hours with a student, right? The student had missed some classes, right? Because that student had been out and was waiting for a test to come back for COVID, right? And tested negative for COVID. Right. So the student came into office hours, trying to make stuff up. Right. So it sits there and, you know, she's still kind of like sniffly and things like this. Right. Later on that day or the next day or something like this, she says, or I don't know if it's he or she, but the student said, I thought I should let you know that I just lost my sense of smell and taste. Right. And this is like after.
That's negative.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, like,
and it's after a session of like in an office, right. Reviewing stuff. I mean, there's nothing that you can do. And it's, and you know, at least I can say here in Perkasie, there's a, you know, parents group that are kind of, I think as outraged and concerned and are organizing right around school board members and things like this. When I go to my place of work, it's like, everybody is just, I mean, at least the faculty members seem overwhelmingly just resolved to just like grin and bear it, I guess. I mean, it's depressing. And, you know, I mean, students are organizing right now at Kutztown, because there's a lot of students, especially who are, you know, have disabilities, right? Or are kind of at high at risk are really now finding out that they don't feel comfortable being in these classrooms. They thought that, okay, yes, I'm going to be too safe. Like, you know, I have students that I haven't seen now for like a couple of weeks, and they stay in touch with me, but they're like, I'm not going in that classroom. Right. Cause like, I mean, and I'm not blaming them. So I don't know, man. I don't know. We're in for the ride. We're in for the ride. So
yep.
I'm going to go try to Crazy enjoy train. My weekend and kind of like and not think about this stuff for a little bit, which is, I mean, that's a fantasy, but you know, that's what I'm going to do. But
I think I'm going to go get a burrito.
There you go, man. I'm going to go make myself some food that I'm going to think about, you know, maybe going for a long walk or something like that. Not to end on a depressing end. But it is beautiful weather. Get out there, get outside, but stay safe, everybody. Seriously. And take that, you know, opportunity for, you know, to take care of yourselves and be kind to each other, in the midst of all this. And, you know, I'm going to say that too, be kind to each other, right? Recognize we're all going through this stuff. But, you know, be ruthless, as Michael would say, be ruthless to the systems, right? Be kind to each other. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We are going to get out of here. Hope you all have a good weekend. Stay safe. Stay in the fight. Take care of each other, like I said. Sean, man, have an awesome one. I know that you're going to probably like checking out your concert schedule coming up here pretty soon. So here you go.
I'll be going to Menzinger's.
Woohoo! See ya!